This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
It's Creature Feature, a spotlight on one of the Wildlife Hospital Dunedin's extra special guests.
And we welcome back to the awesome morning show, Jordana White from Dunedin Wildlife Hospital to introduce us to another one of the visitors to the hospital. And Morena, good to have you with us, Jordana.
Morena, thanks for having me back.
Another winged friend for us to meet today. Tell us who.
Oh, buckle up, Jeff. We've got a weird one for you today.
Oh, weird. I love weird.
Very excited about this one, yes. So today we're going to be talking about an Australasian bittern or a Matuku hurepo. Now, if you're not familiar with this bird, I'm going to try to give you the image, which is basically if you take a feather duster and a weka and they have a love child and then you make it super, super angry, that's a bittern. That is the best way that
I can describe bittern.
It. It's a very weird bird, which makes it really cool, and I'm very excited to talk about it.
It's a fantastic description, and I have seen a photograph, and that's very apt.
It's the only way I could do it. So I'll get a bit more technical in a moment, but I think that helps kind of evoke the image. Nurse Emily sent the photo through, which we always do. We have a little group chat, and if we get a new species, it's very exciting, very hot on the group chat when there's a new species. So this is the first one of these that we've ever seen. In terms of caring for it, I should say. But when she sent it, I had absolutely no idea what I was looking at. I have seen photos of bittern before, but not in the hospital environment where it's taking on quite a different stance. So that's fair enough. This bittern was found by a farmer in North Southland. And I have to wonder if he knew what he was looking at when he found it, or she, I should say. I don't know who, you know. I don't know if many people know about these birds. Perhaps if you live in an area where bittern can be found, you would know what they were, but I myself would have been very confused if I had found it. So let me describe it a little bit more in detail. So this is a heron species, but if your listeners are thinking about like a white heron, they're definitely on the wrong track.
Not quite as elegant.
It doesn't look like that to me at all. It's not white. It's got sort of beige plumage, and it's got dark brown streaking and mottling. There's a lot of variation in the plumage, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of male, female, age kind of a thing. It's just that, I don't know, all bitterns are beautiful and unique, I guess. It's quite a long bird. It's 74 centimeters, so it's and that's due to its long kind of go-go gadget.
What are you
neck.
Measuring there? From where to where?
From the bill to the tail?
Yeah.
I'm not actually sure because I haven't personally measured a bittern myself, but yeah, that's sort of the general thing. But it is quite and I do recommend to your listeners when you're safe to do it. If you're driving, obviously don't do it now, but hop on NZ Birds online and look up bittern and have a look at these birds, because they're really quite interesting to look at. They got a really long, thick neck, so not quite as elegant as the white herons that you're used to seeing, and has a yellow bill and sort of short legs.
Shorter
legs in relation to the length of the body and the neck, yes, absolutely. And it's the neck is really long. I'm going to emphasize that, because part of the reason for that, I think they've evolved this way, is that if they think they've been seen by a human or another predator, they'll elongate their neck and point their bill skyward and just freeze. So that's called sort of the surveillance or the camouflage pose. So they'll do that when they're hunting as well. If they're kind of being really still, they're maybe hunting down a frog or something, and they're just staying still to not be seen. But I think that they're doing that to blend in with the surrounding area.
They want to be a stick or a bush.
Because they live in wetlands, there's these, mostly in ropo or bulrush cattail. So they're kind of mimicking the height of the grass, slender grass. And it actually can work quite well. So this is a bird that is considered extremely cryptic, very difficult to see, very difficult to put your eyes on. And even people who are real bird nerds and are out actually looking for bittern will often not see them. They might be sitting in one spot looking, waiting for hours, because this is how passionate people are about bitterns. They won't see one. They'll go, all right, not today. They'll stand up and walk away. And when they stand up and walk away, they actually flush one that was just meters away from them.
Right.
So they had no idea that they were there. So they're actually pretty good about it with that. I will say sometimes they will be out more in the open if they're out on the edge of the wetland, or they're maybe in a flooded paddock or something if they're hunting. And they are disturbed. They'll go into that freeze position. But if they're out in the open, it looks a bit ridiculous because they're not blending in with anything. So I sort of would consider that the "you can't see me" kind of defense, which doesn't really work. But yeah, it's in the hospital. We're not seeing that sort of tall, elongated, frozen surveillance or camouflage stance. It's mostly lying down and retracting its neck into its like in towards its body. So all the neck and the body feathers really puff out, and its little head and its beady little eyes are like kind of tucked into the middle of this big poofy, fluffy, feathery thing.
And in that context, the head just looks really tiny.
It looks so ridiculous. And I've sent Jeff a photo, and I beg of you to put it on the website because it should be seen. It's so strange looking. And I think it's actually quite unfair because it looks so fluffy and soft in that photo and with all the poofy feathers, but then the really sneaky sharp bit is in the middle and it's kind of disguised. So it's actually quite a clever stance, yeah. In terms of being in the hospital. But yeah, really, really cryptic. This is definitely the first one of these that we've had. And I know some pretty passionate birders who have never seen one of these in the wild. So pretty tricky to see, often really deep into the grass in the wetland areas. So you're not going to really see them very often. So this is a bird that we've talked about birds like this before, where their presence is often detected just by sound because there's really no other predictable way to understand that they're present. So one of the things that I find so weird about this bird is the sound that the males make. And we've got an example of it here, and you are not entering the twilight zone. This is a bird call.
Let's take a listen. Yeah, that's evocative of the kakapo.
Exactly. That's the only other time I've heard this call is with the kakapo. It's called a boom. So these birds are also occasionally just called boomers, which maybe is a bit ageist. I'm not sure. So they do this booming, which is presumably part of their mating ritual, as it is with kakapo. The females are almost entirely silent. So they don't make any kind of noise. They don't even do the booming or any, you know, respond to the booming in mating season. So they are very difficult to study because they're just quiet and hidden. So this particular one I mentioned was found in North Southland, and it came to us because it was emaciated. So in really, really starving condition. It only weighed in at 671 grams. So the lightest, you know, the sort of typical would be 900 grams for a female, 1400 all the way up to 2300 grams for a male. So this is, and we are really thinking this is probably a female. We don't know that a male would have been able to survive being that underweight. So we are actually quite hopeful it's a female because this is quite a rare opportunity to have a female bittern in hospital. So there's potential for her to be tracked if she survives and we can release her. So that's pretty exciting. It's unclear how she ended up in this condition. We're not sure yet if she has any kind of underlying disease or issue that led her to be in this way. If she was injured somehow, what we're doing is undertaking a refeeding protocol. So that is trying to get the weight up and get body condition back on the bird. But because she's in such an emaciated state, we have to do that really, really slowly. So the instinct, of course, is to just pack her full of food because she's so skinny. But if you do that, you risk essentially sending her into organ failure because you're shocking the system. So it has to be done really slowly. And we are feeding her fish slurry, which all of your listeners will be familiar with if they've listened to this segment before. So they do eat lots of fish and eels and other little things that live in wetland areas. So the fish slurry is totally appropriate for getting her back up into body condition.
Do you need to force feed? If they're stressed out, are they likely to want to eat?
So yeah, both of those things. So yes, we are having to force feed. And yes, she is very stressed out. So this is a bird that's really easily disturbed in the wild. They don't like it. They're really spooky. You know, they get spooked quite easily, and that's no different in hospital. So we have her in our third ward, which is our quarantine ward. So we're keeping her away from any other noise or disturbance. We only go into the room twice a day, minimal handling. We're not in there, you know, taking photographs or just checking on. It's as hands-off as possible. And it's also, part of it is for health and safety of our staff as well, because this is a very angry bird. We have to wear eye protection. It's got that long neck that but the sharp bit at the end that can come out of nowhere, and that they don't enjoy being handled. So it's for all parties, it's best to be as hands-off as possible.
Yeah, and you don't consider sedating birds to handle them, or do you need to do that from time to time?
No, not for handling. When we feel that it's well enough to do more procedures in terms of diagnostics, we will sedate the bird. So if we need to do x-rays or a full physical exam, we need to do some physio to keep wings and all of the other limbs limber, as it were, then we can sedate the bird. I'm probably speaking a little out of turn here, but even to do things like taking blood, I would think would be done under sedation along with other procedures. Yeah, absolutely. And we did get it. We popped over to Ribbonwood Nursery in Cockeray Valley to pick up some plants for it, just to try to give it a little bit of that natural feel, a little bit of the natural cover. They do like to hide, obviously, so we want her to feel like if she's feeling well enough to stand up and hide behind a plant, that's a good sign, but we want to give her that opportunity if she's able. And it's still alive. We haven't lost it yet, which is good. So we're hoping that she'll get a little bit more mobile and move around a little bit more. We'll give her more space in the ward, and we will fill it with plants because we want her to feel as least stressy as possible. But as I said, really rare bird. They're considered really highly mobile, so they can fly pretty great distances. So we don't know if this one was near where it was living, or if it was en route to somewhere else. We just don't know what's happened to it. There is definitely habitat in Southland, so there's some pretty large wetland areas that are known to have bitterns, absolutely. So it's possible that she came from one of those areas. We're just not sure. We're not sure of the origin story, but one thing that we do know is we've lost 90% of our wetlands in New Zealand over the last 100 years, and unfortunately some draining is still occurring. So this bird is quite under threat, and in fact, yet another thing that it has similar to the kakapo is its threat level classification. So this is a nationally critical species. This is one step before extinction. So think about that. I mean, that we've got kakapo we have 200 kakapo, and we hear about them all the time. You don't hear a lot about bittern, but they're the same level of threat. It's thought that the population has declined 90% in New Zealand. Now, I've just said 90% of our wetlands have declined, so, there's no mystery there. Yeah, exactly. This species is also found in Australia and in New Caledonia. Australia, the population is thought to be declined 90% as well. And in New Caledonia, there's only about 50 individual birds left. So we're getting pretty close with this one, and that is really worrying.
And it's difficult to determine populations given that they're not easy to track.
Exactly. So some people will question that. Like, how do you tell that there's a 90% decline if you can't track them? So there are ways that they are studied, and that is especially it's getting better, actually. It's getting easier to study these birds with advances in technology. So it used to be the population studies were around that booming sound that we heard. So they would record in the breeding season, they would put out recorders and count the booms and count the number of individual birds and the duration and all of that. And they would get an idea of how many birds were out there in that particular area. So that's something that they can do. There are also some birds that wear backpacks, which again is a kakapo related thing. They've got these little transmitters on them so that they can be tracked. So that's to help understand their movement and understand what their areas they're inhabiting. And that is a possibility that this female or this we're assuming it's a female, if this bittern survives, that she could wear a transmitter.
All right. We had a similar conversation a couple of months ago about the marsh crake in terms of what we can do to help support these populations. Clearly, what's happening with our wetlands is a major concern. If you're in a position to be able to advocate or do some work around that, of course, that'll be hugely valuable. Support the organisations that are doing that.
Yep, exactly. The Sinclair Wetlands is a good example. So they are known to have some bittern at the Sinclair Wetlands, which is pretty cool. So I recommend definitely going to visit, checking out Sinclair Wetlands, seeing what's involved, donate to them, visit them, volunteer, get stuck in, put some plants in the ground or into the water, I guess, in a wetland area. And there's other little wetland projects around Dunedin, like Tomahawk Lagoon, for example. I don't think that they probably will support bitterns there, but they do support marsh crakes. And that's actually good that you brought that up. So we talked about marsh crakes a bit ago, and they're often species that are found together. So if it's healthy enough to support bittern, it will support marsh crake and vice versa. Mm. So it's a good sign if you have either one of those birds. But yeah, and groups there, there's check out Facebook if you're interested. There's a pretty active bittern conservation group. You can learn more about these birds and what can be done to protect them. And trapping, absolutely get involved in predator trapping because it is an issue. Feral cats in these wetland areas is a problem. And stoats absolutely can run into the reed grass and grab chicks and eggs. So getting involved in predator trapping will also help quite a bit.
Well, we wish this one all the best. We'll see how that pans out. But thanks to you and your team for putting the care into this particular creature and for bringing us these fascinating creatures to talk about each month here on ORFM. We so enjoy it. Thanks and Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you very much, and to you as well.
The Wildlife Hospital Dunedin treats sick and injured native New Zealand species right here in the heart of Aotearoa's wildlife capital. Their expert veterinary team patches up more than 500 patients every year, returning the majority of them back to the wild where they belong. You can learn more about the hospital, including ways to support this charitable trust, at wildlifehospitaldunedin.org.nz or follow their Facebook page for more fabulous creature content.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.